Well, I have a few questions for the time tonight. The first question I found under my door sometime this week. I don't remember what day it was, but someone had slid the question under the door. So I don't know exactly who's asking the question. I do hope I know who's answering it. But anyway, the question is this. Very timely. Is the vaccine, I'm assuming the vaccine for the COVID-19 virus, is the vaccine the mark of the beast? Some are saying that it is. Well, now, of course, the idea of the mark of the beast is quite a controversial subject anyway. You have to believe in a certain eschatological position in order to actually approach this question, as I think a lot of people are talking about the question. The eschatological position that speaks about the mark of the beast at the end time, that you will never be able to buy or sell unless you have that mark, that this is the eschatology that is known as premillennial dispensationalism. There's a number of flavors of premillennial dispensationalism, but I won't bore you with all of those. But most people I have found in the churches that I have been members of, Baptist churches, and those that I know about, most are what we would call premillennial, pre-tribulational rapture dispensations. Now, I'm sure y'all know exactly what all that means. What it means is it actually goes back to Revelation 20. And of course, if you wanted to turn to Revelation 20, at the beginning of Revelation 20, it says, I saw an angel come down. So this is verse 1, an angel come down from heaven, having the key of the bottomless pit and a great chain in his hand. And he laid hold on the dragon, that old serpent, which is the devil and Satan. So do you have any idea who's being chained here, right? So it's the serpent, it is the dragon, it is the devil, and it is Satan, and bound him for 1,000 years. Now, the word for 1,000, that word is in Latin, millennium. So, pre-millennium. Now, in Greek, it's kilios or kilion, and so sometimes these people in history were called kilonist, but more often it's called millennial. Well, this 1,000 years that Satan is bound, what premillennial dispensationalists believe is that the church will be raptured out of here by this time. And that there will be, then when the Lord returns to the earth, that to reign 1,000 years. So the church will be raptured. There'll be 7 years of tribulation. And then the Lord will return to set up his kingdom on earth for 1,000 years, and Satan will be chained. And so everything will go well, but after the 1,000 years, Satan will be loosed. And then verse 3 says, and so he's going to be chained, cast, he's going to be cast into the bottomless pit, going to be shut up, and a seal is going to be put on him that he should not deceive the nations till 1,000 years should be fulfilled. And after that, he must be loosed a little season. And then when he's loosed, he's going to claim some souls. But ultimately, there will be a final showdown. And verse 14 says, and death and hell were cast into the lake of fire. And this is the second death. And whosoever was not found written in the book of life was cast into the lake of fire. And then chapter 21, I saw a new heaven and a new earth coming down. And so this is after Satan is thoroughly completed, or defeated, I should say. Well, before that, there are, in the book of Revelation, there are verses of scripture that speak of a mark. Now, the first mark that it speaks of is in chapter 7 of the book of Revelation. Chapter 7 says, and after these things I saw four angels standing on the four corners. They were standing on the four corners of the earth, holding the four winds of the earth, and that the wind should not blow on the earth, nor on the sea, nor on any tree. And I saw another angel ascending from the east, having the seal of the living God, and he cried with a loud voice to the four angels to whom it was given, to hurt the earth and the sea, saying, hurt not the earth, neither the sea, nor the trees, till we have sealed the servants of our God in their forehead. So there's a seal put in their forehead. And I heard the number of them which were sealed, and they were 144,000. There were 12,000 from each tribe of the 12 tribes. And so in numerology, that would be a complete sealing of those who are the Lord's. Well, you'll notice that that the first seal is those who know the Lord. So they have it, and it's in their forehead. Now, it's kind of interesting that it's in their forehead, the idea of thinking, the idea of this is what when you pray, because the idea of bowing your head and putting your hands in front of your chin is a relatively late occurrence in praying, because the Jewish prayers were a wide open stance with hands and palms up and face up to God to receive whatever God has. Well, there is another seal, another mark that is spoken of in the 13th chapter of the book of Revelation. It starts out with there was this beast that rose up out of the sea, and it has seven heads, and it has 10 horns. And And upon his horns, 10 crowns. Okay, so there's seven heads, 10 horns, and 10 crowns, and upon his head, or his heads, the name of blasphemy. So this is against God. And the beast which I saw was like unto a leopard, and his feet were as the feet of a bear, and his mouth as the mouth of a lion. And the dragon gave him his power. Of course, the dragon is the devil. So here's this beast, like a leopard, like a bear, like a lion. And now Satan is animating him with power. And his seat, so gave him his power, and he gave him his seat, or his throne, and his authority. And I saw one of his heads, so here are the seven heads, one of the heads as if it were wounded to death, and his deadly wound was healed. And all the world wondered after the beast. So the world is following and is mesmerized by this beast. And they worship the dragon, which gave power unto the beast. And they worship the beast, saying, "Who is like unto the beast? Who is able to make war with him?" And there was given unto him a mouth speaking great things and blasphemies. So not only are there blasphemies now upon these crowns, but now blasphemies coming out of his mouth. And power was given unto him to continue 42 months. So that's 3.5 years. 36 and 6. 36 months would be 3 years. Another half would be 6 months. So that would be, 3.5 years. And he opened his mouth in blasphemy against God to blaspheme his name and his tabernacle and them that dwell in heaven. And it was given unto him to make war with the saints and to overcome them. And power was given him over all kindreds and tongues and nations. And all that dwell upon the earth shall worship him, whose names are not written in the book of life of the Lamb slain from the foundation of the world. Now, you can read that title two different ways. Written in the book of the life, or in the book of life of the Lamb who was slain from the foundation of the world, or who was not written in the book of life of the Lamb, and the name of the book of, this is a modifier of Lamb. So it's not that the Lamb was slain from the foundation of the world. It is that the names were written in the, from the foundation of the world. Now you say, well, and I think I looked at this with you before, and what gives the fact that it is the names written before the foundation of the world, as opposed to the Lamb slain, is in the 17th chapter, and verse 8 says, "And the beast that thou sawest was and is not, and shall ascend out of the bottomless pit and go into perdition, and they that dwell on the earth shall wonder, whose names are not written in the book of life from the foundation of the world, when they behold the beast that was and is not and yet is." So the names were written before the foundation of the world. You'll notice Lamb is not here. So it seems as if, the idea that it, the book is the book of the life of the Lamb, and that this book, these names were written in here before the foundation of the world. So that's kind of a little catchy there. Though I've heard some preachers, and I have myself, said that he's the Lamb slain from the foundation of the world. Verse 9 says, if any man have an ear, let him hear. He that leadeth into captivity shall go into captivity. And he that killeth with the sword must be killed with the sword. Here is the patience and the faith of the saints. And I beheld another beast come up out of the earth. All right, so one beast came up out of the sea. Now this beast comes up out of the earth, and he had two horns like a lamb. But he spake as a dragon. And he exercised all the power of the first beast before him, and caused the earth and them which dwell therein to worship the first beast, whose deadly wound was healed. And he doeth great wonders, so that he maketh fire come down from heaven on the earth in the sight of men, and deceive them. Now you notice that, if you'll remember, that Satan was chained, that he could not deceive anymore. But here it's saying, and he deceived them, this two-horned beast, deceived them that dwell on the earth by the means of those miracles which he had power to do in the sight of the beast, saying to them that dwell on the earth that they should make an image to the beast which had the wound by a sword and did live. And he had power to give life unto the image of the beast, that the image of the beast should both speak and cause that as many as would not worship the image of the beast should be killed. And he causeth all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and bond, to receive a mark in their right hand or in their foreheads, and that no man might buy or sell save he that had the mark or the name of the beast or the number of his name. Here is wisdom. Let him that hath understanding count the number of the beast. For it is the number of a man. All right, so we know that this beast is a man. And his number is 666, or 666. Now, 666 actually has become a number that has evil connotation, right? I mean, in our society, nobody wants a phone number that's got 666, or you don't want to. I remember my grandmother, they were telling me when I was a child that my grandmother said that the world will end when the Social Security numbers get to 666. I don't think they've gotten there yet. I don't know. Mine's 438. Is someone higher than that? What's yours, George? 587. That's getting closer. All right, anybody higher than 587? Well, we have a few years left, I guess. But anyway. Now, what is this? What is this beast? What is this thing that has come up out of the sea? Or what is this two-horned lamb that points everybody, or two-horned lamb that talks like a dragon that's pointing everybody to the beast, to worship the beast. Well, it's pretty clear that in the 14th chapter, they begin to talk about Babylon, and that Babylon is going to be judged. And this discussion, I don't have time to give you all of this, but this discussion continues till the 17th chapter and verse 5 that says, "And upon her forehead was a name written." That is this this woman who's arrayed in purple and scarlet. Mystery Babylon, the great mother of harlots and abominations of the earth. And I saw the woman drunken with blood, with the blood of the saints, and with the blood of the martyrs of Jesus. And when I saw her, I wondered with great admiration. And the angel said unto me, "Wherefore didst thou marvel? I will tell thee the mystery of the woman and of the beast that carried her, which hath seven heads and ten horns. The beast that thou sawest was and is not, and shall ascend out of the bottomless pit, and shall go into perdition. And they that dwell on the earth," and every time you read that phrase in the book of Revelation, "they that dwell upon the earth," it's kat oikeo, down dwellers, it's negative. It's not Christians, we are para oikeo or para oikeo, we are side dwellers, but these are down dwellers, so it's a negative. These are the people that are upon the earth, contrary or different than the saints. These people who dwell upon the earth, whose names are not written in the book of life from the foundation of the world, when they behold the beast that was and is not and yet is, and here is the mind which hath wisdom. The seven heads are seven mountains on which the woman sitteth. And there are seven kings. Five are fallen. One is, and the other is not yet come. And when he cometh, he must reign, or he must continue a short space. He won't reign very long. And the beast that was and is not, even he is the eighth, and he is, and is of the seven that goeth into perdition. So he comes up out of them, this eighth one. And the ten horns which thou sawest are ten kings, which have received no kingdom as yet, but receive power as kings 1 hour with the beast. These have one mind, and shall give their power and strength unto the beast. These shall make war with the Lamb, and the Lamb shall overcome them, for he is the Lord of lords and King of kings, and they that are with him are called and chosen and faithful. And he saith unto me, "The waters which thou sawest, where the whore sitteth, are people." Peoples and multitudes and nations and tongues. And the ten horns which thou sawest upon the beast, these shall hate the whore, and shall make war and make her desolate and naked, and shall eat her flesh and burn her with fire. For God hath put in their hearts to fulfill his will, and to agree and give their kingdom unto the beast until the words of God shall be fulfilled. And the woman which thou sawest is that great city which reigneth over the kings of the earth. And when the city falls, there's going to be great lamentation, great lamenting. Now, it is if you have any historical understanding, and surely the people who received the book of Revelation would have understood this, you would know that Rome was built on seven mountains. She's called a great city, reigns over peoples, and will ultimately be overthrown and will be divided into 10 kingdoms. If you go back to the image in the book of Daniel, you'll notice that the feet and the toes are iron mingled with clay. The Roman Empire in that image are the legs, but it breaks into 10 kingdoms here, 10 horns. And they burn her and they overthrow her. And when that happened, when Rome falls, the whole world will lament. Now it's interesting that this mark of the beast has something to do with buying and selling. You notice, that seems a little surprising to me. But why wouldn't it be about theology and religion? Why is it about buying and selling? And of course, this whore of Babylon, riding on these mountains, makes war with the saints. Well, all of this adds up that what he's talking about is the Roman Empire, even when he gets down to the name of the man, which is the eighth one, and he's talking about these kings, the five who were, and then the two that's coming, and when the seventh one comes, he will reign. Shortly, right before Nero, there was a Caesar that reigned just 5 months. Nero was called by the Jews Neron, Kaiser, as opposed to Nero. There is a textual variant there in the 13th chapter of Revelation. And some of you that have a modern Bible that read or have access to a modern Bible with footnotes, we'll probably have a footnote that says some manuscripts say 616, which would be 50 less than 666, because that ruins the idea about 666 being evil. But you'll know that the Hebrews used letters as numbers, kind of like the Roman Empire. The Roman numerals, for us, they don't look like numerals, they look like letters. Well, that's what the Hebrews did. Nero would not have, and of course, they're only consonants because they didn't write vowels. Hebrew does not write vowels. You have to know the vowels when you learn Hebrew. That's why the Germans came up with a system of vowels called pointings. You'll notice that if you run the numbers, that if you call him Neron Kaiser or Nero Caesar, Neron Kaiser, it adds to 616, but the new that would be Ron, the N that comes over as an N, the new in Hebrew, the N in Hebrew, is valued as a numeral 50. So this is a time where textual variant really helps, that someone said, well, this is not, it can't be 666 because it's Nero Kaiser. It has to be 616. But whoever made that variant writing didn't understand that the Jews never referred to him as Nero or as Nero Caesar, but only as Nero Caesar. Well, now to put the punctuation on the fact that this is the Roman Empire and this is Rome, you can go to 1 Peter chapter 5, and verse 12 says, well, verse 11 says, to him be glory and dominion forever and ever, amen. And then verse 12 says, so this is 1 Peter 5:12, by Silvanus, so Silvanus has written this down for Peter, a faithful brother unto you, as I suppose I've written briefly, exhorting and testifying that this is the true grace of God wherein ye stand. The church that is at Babylon, elected together with you, salute you, and so doth Marcus, or John Mark, my son. Now, where was Peter when he was writing this letter? Well, he wasn't in Babylon, because there's no historical evidence that there was a church in Babylon at all. But Peter was in Rome. There was a church in Rome. The church that is at Babylon. So it seems as if that in the writing of the New Testament, it was commonly understood that Babylon and Rome were synonymous. So they're calling Rome Babylon. Now, did they know this book? Did they know well, some people say that the book of Revelation is written in 96. I think it was written much earlier. I think it was written before the destruction of the temple. There's too many details of the temple in the book. And so looking at Rome. Now, why did I go through all of that? Just by the way, I got I'm sure some of you might have gotten it also, that David is being taken to Forest General by helicopter, and he will receive dialysis when he arrives. Well, why did I go through all of that? Well, to answer the question, if you're looking at this question from a premillennial dispensational view, no. This is not the mark of the beast. It has nothing to do with letters or numbers. However, if you understand through a proper exegesis of the book of Revelation, that what we're actually talking about, you see, the beast is Rome, the two-horned beast is emperor worship. That was the major religion of the Roman Empire's emperor worship. And that's what set them against Christians. They didn't really care about religions in Rome. In fact, most of the leaders of Rome at the time of Christ, and most of the senators, and most of even the poets and the writers, They were atheists. They didn't believe that there were anybody. They didn't believe any gods were on the mountain out there. They didn't believe that. They were basically atheists, but they knew that you had to have a religion. They understood that religion is what animated and what gave people a reason to live. And so the major religion was to worship the emperor. And so this idea about a head being wounded and coming back to life is to give credence to the fact that the emperor would be God, would be a God. And this idea of buying and selling, it's commerce. They were the head of commerce. And why did the nations weep at the judgment of the great whore of Babylon? Because the party was over. That would be like if the United States of America tonight went out of business, it would not only hurt the United States of America, it'd hurt the world, wouldn't it? I mean, China wouldn't have a market. If we disappeared tonight as a power of commerce, if we didn't trade anymore, if we were gone, China wouldn't main. In fact, the whole world would fall. Because I can tell you this, socialism, and most of the world are socialists, socialism cannot sustain itself. Socialism has to be sustained by capitalism or free enterprise. Somebody's got to make the money. So, if the mark of the beast is a totalitarian government that has tyranny over its citizens, then you could make an argument. Now, they have not yet mandated a vaccine. It's been only through persuasion. But you begin to see people start talking about the vaccine in certain ways. Well, if you're not vaccinated, then you can't get in a football game. If you're not vaccinated, then you can't fly. Now, that's not now, but y'all see some of you shaking your head. Yeah, I mean, is it right? I mean, are you not beginning to feel like that's where it's going? That they can't convince. In fact, I read something the other day that vaccinations are actually decreasing instead of increasing. And then we've got the problem with people who are getting the vaccines are still getting the COVID. Okay, is it the mark of the beast? Yeah, it's a mark of the beast in the sense that an overarching government is going to mandate us taking it. And the thing about it is, it's amazing to me how many people have just rolled over. Now, whether you take the vaccine or not, I think obviously that is your decision. There is medicine out there. This medicine, whatever you may think of it or not think of it, if you are, you know, fairly confident in it, and there seems to be the overwhelming numbers that people are not being harmed by it. I don't know if all the evidence is in yet or not. I don't know. Who am I to say? But people are not being harmed by it. And many, many, many people that you can trust are saying, you know, get the vaccine. I got the vaccine. From Nancy Pelosi and Joe Biden to Ben Shapiro. And all the conservative guys, you know, I'm thinking maybe even Tucker Carlson. Is say, okay, well, so it seems like it doesn't really matter if you're liberal or conservative, but the problem is when it's mandated. The problem is if you don't get this vaccine, you cannot go to the grocery store. Now, they've not said any of that, and it may never get there, but I think some of us are beginning to get a little antsy about that kind of thing. What about a vaccine passport, you see? Well, is it the mark of the beast? Short answer, no. Long answer, could be. Not in the premillennial dispensational sense, but in the sense that here was the Roman Empire, and when Rome spoke, the world listened. The problem with the Roman Empire, as opposed to the United States of America, the United States of America, at least up to this moment, has been free, and we don't impose our will on others. I mean, obviously, militarily, we might do something like that, or if they're taking our money, we might put stipulations on it. But we are not a totalitarian government that demands allegiance. That is why the Roman Empire was against Christianity. They weren't really afraid of any religions. There was lots of religions in Rome, in the Roman Empire. And they usually just incorporated religions into. But here's the one thing that they could not tolerate. They could not tolerate Christians making this confession: Jesus is Lord. Because Caesar was Lord. Is there going to be conflict between Caesar is Lord and Jesus? And there was. And what did Rome do? They slaughtered, persecuted, crucified, fed to wild animals, drowned, flayed, drawn and quartered Christians. To such a degree that the book of Revelation has that here are the saints under the throne of God who had been martyred. In fact, Rome killed so many Christians that actually the word for witness, martyreo, became actually the word to die or to be killed for your faith. Often wondered, how could this happen? When we are so informed, how could this happen? And it's happening. I mean, Norman and I were talking this afternoon. If you got skin in the game, meaning how far are you going to defend Christ? How far are you going to defend your Christianity? To what level are you going? When it starts costing you money? You say, well, that's a bridge too far. Or when it cost you jobs? Well, you see, the whole world capitulated to Rome. Why? Because they got bread and circuses. They were able to make a living. But then Rome attacked Christ. It failed because God judged it. There was no way that these people could ever have envisioned a world without Rome any more than you and I can envision a world without America. So we must take heart. I had another question. The question was, can those in heaven see us here? Well, the short answer is, the Bible really doesn't say. Though, in the book of Hebrews, it is said that we are surrounded by a cloud of witnesses. But witnesses to what? Obviously, witnesses to the salvation of the Lord. I cannot be dogmatic. I don't think the scripture even talks about this. But I would have to lean toward they can't because there are no tears in heaven. And if they're seeing this, if they're seeing what I'm doing, it would may cause them great distress. That's no real definitive answer. So I guess maybe definitively I should say, the Bible doesn't say, and I don't know. But I do know this. God is watching. We teach our children, can you see God? No, I cannot see God. But He always sees me. And I think a 4-year-old or maybe a 5-year-old CJ said, that's spooky. They were teaching him the catechism. Michael McKnight was teaching him, and when he taught him that, CJ said, now that's spooky. Well, God can see you. That should be enough.